Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Each week, Canadian running staff writer Maddie Kelly and I bring you the news, results, and drama from the exciting world of running. This is The Rundown. It is yet another snowy day in southern Ontario. We were texting this morning, Maddie, trying to set up the time of recording, and I said something like we're getting a whole winter's worth of snow in 3 weeks, and it really feels that way.
I had to go to a workout last week, and I was kind of snoozing a little bit because, you know, if I have the opportunity to sleep in before a big workout, I'm going to take it. And I was awoken by my roommate/partner, Jeremy, who said, "I've been shoveling for an hour and a half. Hate to wake you up, Sleeping Beauty, but if you want to leave, you got to get out here too." And he started shoveling at 8:30. We stopped shoveling at 11. I like had to leave at 11:05 to get to the workout on time. It was insane in Hamilton last weekend, and it just didn't stop. And we have recently inherited a really long driveway. So
adding to the cross training.
No, totally. I got there and I was like, I don't need to activate. I'm ready to go.
I'm warmed up. Let's do it.
Yeah, but it is this snow is the gift that keeps on giving over the past few weeks.
You know, I was talking with my coach about this, and now the precursor to this is whatever you need to do to feel safe out there as a runner, please put that first. However, I will say I've been putting on the trail shoes. I've been, you know, we've talked about this before, but the lakeshore in Toronto is reliably clear of snow and ice, which is great. But I've also taken to like running through the neighborhoods where I know people have at least done a little bit of snow clearance. And I find that both my plyometrics and my low leg strengthening has really benefited from having to like either like just change your pace significantly and slow down on the slightly like snowy bits and get into that like quick step. Or I've been like doing these little hurdles back and forth over the snowbanks because, you know, you're running down the sidewalk, it's clear for like 10 houses. Then all of a sudden someone hasn't cleared it. You have to hurdle onto the road or you're like avoiding a dog walker. And I've become quite nimble through this crazy winter that we've been having. So
agile,
looking for the silver lining. Yeah, my agility has increased significantly. I don't even need to do speed ladder stuff. I'm just getting it on my runs.
It's all about silver linings. See, I'm a little bit of a baby. And so if the road conditions aren't great, I usually just hop on the bike. And so I've just been, I just watch my lectures. I watch my lectures while I ride the bike.
And way to multitask.
It is. It feels, it's a good way to get two birds stoned at once, as Trailer Park Boys said. And when I've run out of lectures to watch, then I just watch junk TV. And I feel a little bit better about my reality TV obsession when I'm exercising while I watch it.
Yeah. And after you've listened to a lecture, it's like you're having your dessert after a good meal.
Oh my God, Kate. Exactly.
I can relate. So I do the same thing. I'm not in school at the moment, although I've been listening to a ton of audiobooks. Most recently, Range by David Epstein. He is the author of The Sports Gene as well. I highly recommend Range. Fascinating book. But yeah, I'll listen to like, you know, 45 minutes of that. And then for the last 15 minutes, I'll throw on that really stupid Netflix show Superstore, which contributes nothing to my life other than make me laugh a little bit.
No, I call them trainer shows.
It's great. Totally, whatever gets you through.
Exactly.
So we have a few pieces. We have a few results to cover from the weekend. Some actually super impressive 10Ks that we're going to start with out in California. So neat to watch another outdoor track meet in North America. Mm-hmm. So this was called, and the other thing I love about, and I don't know if this is just like due to COVID, but and I'm not trying to knock people's creativity, but the names of these meets are just like to the point. This was a race. This was a track meet involving only 10,000 meter races, and it was called The 10. Doesn't get much more simple than that, but I appreciate that because it tells you exactly what you're going to get into. So these races were set up in California with the goal of getting as many athletes as possible under the 10,000 meter Olympic standards of 31:25 for the women and 27:28 for the men. Okay, side note, these are like crazy fast. standards. These are the fastest 10,000 meter standards I've ever seen. When I remember when they were released, I was like, yeah, right. They made a mistake. Like the numbers are wrong.
I know. No, the women's 10 specifically is bonkers. I remember, yeah, a few people tweeted like after those standards came out and they were like, I am sorry to people who run the women's 10,000 and the women's 800 meter. You were kind of sewered in this standard selection.
And on paper, that's really true. But I will say five women and five men both went under this 10,000 meter Olympic standard, plus a whole whack of others who went under the U.S. Olympic trial standard, which was about a minute slower in each event. This was sort of like the Bowerman Track Club showdown. There were a few other athletes, but it was mainly BTC. And I want to start with the women's race because this was the most exciting event I've seen in a very long time. 10,000 meters is a lot of laps. 30 minutes is a long time to watch people run in circles. But you know what? No one can ever tell me that 10,000s aren't exciting because these women, so this was set up mainly for the studs coming in that we thought were probably going to be at the top were Carissa Schweitzer, who ran the second fastest ever US 5,000 meter time back in December, and Elish McColgan, who is a Scottish athlete, who's one of the top runners in Great Britain. And then again, a couple of other Bowerman Track Club athletes. Anyway, this race came down to Elise Cranny and Carissa Schweitzer. This was Elise Cranny's 10,000 meter debut. She's known as a 1500 meter 5K runner. Both she and Carissa have crazy fast times in the shorter distances, but Elise ended up taking the win, edging out Carissa by less than a second, winning in 30:47. In fact, they both ran 30:47, dropping a 65 second final lap. And it was thrilling.
Elise has had, and obviously like the Bowerman training suits her, she has improved enormously in her, like, I think like less than 1 year with the team. And yeah. Usually from what I've heard from people who join, you know, they go from collegiate to post-collegiate running. It's a big jump. That first year or two is not easy. And it usually involves a lot of like, holy crap, did I make a mistake? I'm not cut out to be here. This is a terrible idea. I am so bad at running. But Elise Cranny has done amazingly well. And this time is just, I'm sure, the icing on the cake of a year of very hard work.
A lot of people were commenting, and rightfully so, about the impact that Shalane Flanagan has had on this group of young women as well. And I can't imagine that that has been anything other than significant. You know, like, here's a woman who knows the sport super intimately, only, you know, retired from track running not very many years ago, and is obviously, I mean, at least on paper, these women are running fantastically well. And it's great to see that she's sort of like leaving her legacy both on the track and as a coach. And in fact, these performances by Cranny and Schweitzer put them third and fourth all time on the US women's 10,000 meter list. Number two ahead of them is Shalane Flanagan herself.
Who's number one? Molly?
Yes.
Molly freaking Huddle.
In the men's race, Mark Scott won in 27:10, which puts him second on the British all-time list, only behind Mo Farah. And this was, I think, a 46-second personal best for him. It was a huge improvement. Grant Fisher was second in 27:11, also in his debut. So we saw some incredibly fast times in these debut races. And as I said, in all, there were both five men and five women under those Olympic standards. But I want to talk a little bit about range, speaking of the book I'm reading. Mm-hmm. But what I mean by that is, like, here are these women. So both Elise and Carissa are only 24 years old. They've both run crazy fast times in the 1500 and the 5000. And here they are running incredibly well in the 10,000 meter as well. And I think we've always seen people who have big ranges, but it feels like that's been explored more lately. I don't know if you feel that way, Maddie, in terms of the results we've been seeing. I feel like there's been a departure from specialization, and maybe it's during COVID people feel that they can experiment more with different distances.
I mean, I even feel that in my own training a little bit too lately. And that's certainly progressing over the past few years as I become older and stronger and able to handle a little bit more volume. But you totally see it at the highest level of track. And I believe that now to be a world-class 1500 meter runner, you also need to be a world-class 800 meter runner. And to be a world-class 5K runner, you also need to be a world-class 10K and 1500 runner. Like, you just, like, you have to have bookends on either end of your distance in order to be exceptional at your quote-unquote main event. And we're asking a lot of people to be good at that many things, but it's just the way the sport is going. Like, you need a bananas combination of speed and strength now. Like, I would say the only event, or the events plural, that you get to be very specific are the 100 meter and the marathon. You can just be world-class at the 100 and you can just be world-class at the marathon, and you don't really have to bookend that with world-class. You have to be a good 200 runner. You have to be a good half marathon or 10K-er to be good at the marathon. But you do see people, I feel like, more in those events who really, like, just run the 100 mm-hmm. or just run the marathon, and that is what they're good at. They're okay at other things, but right. they're just really good at those extreme events. But when you get in the middle, especially, I feel like, in the 15 to 10K.
Yeah, I would agree.
You have to be good at all three.
And that's where you're seeing so many people running Olympic standards in two, sometimes three events. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that having that range is great. And I think it probably contributes to longevity in the sport, because you're not pigeonholing yourself, both in terms of, like, your physical well-being. I think it's great to mix up the stimulus, but also mentally, it just keeps you more engaged. It's more exciting when you can work on a range of things. Another woman who has shown incredible range over the last several months, especially, is a good friend of mine, Rachel Schneider, another American, I was going to say mid-distance specialist, but that's just not true anymore. Back in December at the first track meet, Rachel ran a 10,000 meter in 31:09. So again, under that Olympic standard of 31:25, very, very fast time, definitely cracking, I believe, the top 10 all-time list in the US. She has a history of running really, really well in the shorter distances as well, which is what she did over the weekend at the Camel City Invitational in North Carolina. So this meet was, this is an annual event. It's one that I've, have you competed in this one, Maddie?
No, I've never done Camel City.
Okay, so Camel City has been a fixture on the indoor circuit for quite a while. It is known first and foremost for having incredible prize money. So the winner of each event got $6,000 for their victories. Plus, there were time bonuses within each race. These, I think they were 800s, miles, 3,000s, and 5,000s. Due to COVID restrictions, the meet was limited only to those who could come within driving distance of the track in North Carolina. But Rachel Schneider has done this meet for the last several years, and all of the elite events happen in a very short time window on one day, on Saturday. So Rachel doubled in the 3,000 meter and the mile. She won the 3,000 in 8:57, looking so smooth, and came back about 55 minutes later to win the mile in 4:30. This means that just for those two wins back to back, she made $12,000 US. Plus, she would have received time bonuses along the way. So that's a pretty sweet payday.
That's a very sweet payday.
But also great to see. Here's a woman who is super strong, proved that with her early season 10,000. And I think that's why she has the strength to be able to do back-to-back 3,000 meter mile races, win them both in very impressive times.
On to our final piece of news. The American Track League meet number 4 ran yesterday in Arkansas. Allison Felix won the 200 meter in 22:59. She is 35 years old now, and this was her first indoor 200 meter since 2003. And she's still really good.
No kidding. The men's 800 was won in 1:45 by Kenya's Michael Saruni. The women's 800 was won in 2 flat by Heather McLean out of the U.S. Small fields, but pretty quick results. It was mainly a sprint meet. It was mainly the 800s were the longest events. It was mainly sprints and hurdles. Just another weekend of really fast racing. Great to see. So, speaking of running very fast times, we're going to segue into a chat about one of the many reasons why people might be running so fast right now. And this is a very hot topic at the moment, and a pretty contentious one, it seems. Maddie, you actually wrote a piece for our web a few days ago about this. Why don't you explain what we're talking about?
Since the beginning of the year and before in 2020, but basically over the past year, we have seen some earth-shattering times on the track. I called my story Why Super Spikes Aren't Ruining Track and Field. And I stand by this opinion. Despite the fact that we have seen now 7 world records in the past 12 months across different events, I really think it is so reductionist when someone runs an impressive time, be it a world record, an area record, a national record, a personal best, to just call technology as the reason for that world record, area record, national record, personal best. We are coming off of the weirdest year ever, ever. A year when the competition schedule completely changed and people had massive blocks of time to train, also more free time than they've ever had before to put into running. Some people thrived under this model, some people didn't, but obviously the people who are running well may have benefited from this change. Beyond that, there was a period, and I am in no way, shape, or form saying that people who run fast are dopers, but there was a period of several weeks when no one was tested. That's right. A bigger conversation, but you can't talk about this stuff and not say it. There's some new shoe technology. There's some new shoe technology predominantly from Nike and New Balance. Every other major company is testing a prototype. Those are just the two companies who were earliest to the game with these spikes. And like technology is going to improve. It just is. There's, you know, we run much faster than we did 50, 60 years ago because of improvements, not just in tech, but in how we understand physiology, how we understand nutrition. Like, look at the jump in women's running and the jumps that we're going to continue to have. I'm certain just because we understand female physiology now so much better than we did even 20 years ago. Like, there are so many factors that go into running a fast time. And so the idea that someone would run the best in their life and you would immediately discredit it by saying it is the fault of technology is bananas to me. I'm not saying that technology doesn't play a role. I'm actually quite certain it does. These shoes probably make you faster, incrementally faster, but incremental improvements matter to the most elite track runners in the world. In fact, that's literally what we spend every day doing, is trying to find incremental improvement. So I'm not here to say that technology does nothing, but it's not the whole package. There are so many people wearing these quote unquote super shoes who aren't running that well. And then there's lots of people opting out of the super shoes running extremely well. Shelby Houlihan's American record in the summer on the track was in like the most basic pair of Nike spikes, technology that was released in 2008.
So I think this is obviously such a divisive conversation, and but it's also good to talk about the many different facets of it, because there are a lot of different elements going on here. And I agree with you completely that it is too reductionist to say that shoes are either good or bad. They're either making people too fast or they're not, because that's doing a disservice to the whole conversation. It's interesting, though, that you say that, you know, is technology helping? Well, of course it is. And we're kind of treading a line right now where that's actually what shoe companies, that's how they're advertising, is by saying these are going to make you faster. We are the best at creating this new technology. And look at the innovation we've been able to make. Look at the jumps we've been able to make in such a short time. So on the one hand, you actually have the companies, and rightfully, proudly showing off what they've been able to accomplish. But then I think the other half of that narrative is that many of the athletes who are running the really fast times in the shoes are doing what some would say is downplaying the significance of that technology that's being touted by the company themselves in terms of how that's translating to the success of the athlete.
100%. Because they know that they're going to be under some scrutiny for running that time in the shoes they wore, if they wore the quote unquote super shoe. One thing I would like to point out, which I'm surprised isn't more part of the conversation, and actually where the super shoes lose me, is availability.
I was going to ask you about that. Yes.
That
so is, say more about that.
So currently the shoes, if you are a runner in Canada, unless you are one of Nike's sort of like, what are there, like 10 Nike sponsored athletes in Canada, track and field,
something like that,
something like that. Unless you're one of those 10 athletes, you have no access to these shoes.
So, never mind if you're a non-Nike athlete.
So even if you're American, if you're not a Nike athlete, obviously you can't wear them. And even if you're like, you know, a Caterai in the States, they're still really hard to get your hands on. The New Balance shoe isn't even available on their website, on newbalance.ca or newbalance.com. It remains, I'm confused about the New Balance shoe because it's not a prototype. Like, it was like fully ready to go to market and then it just never did. And I wonder if that's COVID delays. But either way, if you are not a New Balance sponsored athlete, you have no access to this shoe. And that is what I see as the problem. Not the fact that technology is improving, because I think that is inevitable. We are currently talking on Zoom. We use iPhones to communicate and everything is in a cloud that we don't know where that is. And I think, you know, track to its own extent will go a similar way. However, the fact that there is a small fraction of the most elite in the track community who have access to these shoes really does create a group of have and have nots. And that's what I see as the issue, not the tech itself.
And that's something that World Athletics has addressed, which is why they put limitations on shoes about just over a year ago. It was around this time last year that we started having this conversation about the Vaporflies.
But that has since changed because they revised the rules in December. So now you are allowed to race in prototypes. A shoe can only be a prototype for up to 12 months, but you right. are allowed to race in a prototype. You are not allowed to race at the Olympics in a prototype.
Right. However, but you can get there.
But you can get there in them. And that is the big goal for so many people, is just to get there. I would be a member of a happy to be there club, and I would love access to these shoes to try and get there. I don't care what I race in at the Olympics. I'll run barefoot. I would just be so glad to be on that start line.
Well, and that's sort of the irony, is that the Olympics, like, it's a level playing field once you're there, but to get there in the current landscape, it's really not. I mean, it's not in so many ways. The whole concept of a have and have nots club has been around, I mean, in every aspect of society, but in our sport, noticeably forever. The pandemic has exacerbated that in many ways, in terms of who has access to races, who has access to travel, who has access to training facilities. We've talked about all of this. And I think I can understand the frustration when you throw an additional level of technology on top of that, that it's not like, it's actually in some ways worse than some of the situations the pandemic has put us in. People can choose in Canada right now, for instance, to travel from a place like snowy Toronto to relatively warmer Victoria, BC, to put in training and racing blocks. There are workarounds, but there aren't workarounds with the technology. You either have access to it or you don't. And I think that gets, you know, if you want to get even further into that, when it comes down company to company, there have been lots of talks around patents on different pieces of technology where a competitive company can't even replicate that technology should they want to or have the resources to. So I think, you know, when we talk about the trickle down, if the Olympics is the pinnacle or the main goal, and then we're figuring out how to get there, and there's already so many barriers in place along the way for people in different parts of the world in different circumstances within a global pandemic to reach that level, I can understand the frustration of throwing an inaccessible technology on top of that. Okay, so on that note then, Maddie, mm-hmm. do you think there should be any restrictions given this conversation on shoe technology right now? Do you think there should be any restrictions at all?
I thought that the widely available rule was a completely reasonable and, in fact, very helpful rule. I mean, you know, when it comes to stack heights and things like that, I think, frankly, as someone who has tried to run fast in a shoe with a high stack height, they don't work. Like on a track.
But they don't work for you as an 800 runner.
That's what I'm saying. So I think it depends distance to distance. If we're talking the marathon, 100%. I think if you like basically put springs on the bottom of your feet, it would make you better. So I think the road limitation for stack height makes a ton of sense. And then again, for sprints, when you're going in a straight line, also the spring, massive. You don't have to turn. And I'm certain that improves your ability to run fast. In the very niche that you and I are in of the 8 and 15, when you're running really quickly around corners, does a high stack height actually inhibit your ability to feel stable and get the most out of your stride? Yeah, in my experience, it does. So for my very specific event, the stack height rule feels less important to me because I don't actually believe that a high stack height will lead to an improved time. But
is that really the conversation? Because that's why we're talking about super spikes right now. Mm-hmm. Because the spikes with a spring in it are the 800 meter equivalent of a marathoner wearing a high stack height. Us having, as mid-distance track athletes, having access to a super spike mm-hmm. is essentially the same thing as a marathoner having access to a high stack height road shoe. Mm-hmm. So I think that's maybe a more productive way to frame this discussion.
Yeah.
Because the marathoner would say the same thing about the spikes. Well, I don't care.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm never going to wear them.
Yeah. Good point. So I guess I don't think there needs to be that much regulation on the spike design itself. I think that shoes have come such a long way, even in the past 10 years. And I think they're going to continue to evolve. I think that's the prerogative of the shoe brands, which is then the prerogative of the athletes, which is the prerogative of the sport as a whole. However, I do think, and people always tie this stuff back to the laser swimsuit, but I do think that accessibility is huge. And that was ultimately why the laser swimsuit was taken out of the running. It wasn't necessarily because it was so fast. It was because it was a $2,000 suit that you could wear once. Mm-hmm. And that is so bad for the sport. Terrible for the sport. Because how many people have access to $2,000 every time they want to swim fast, especially right. in swimming where you do like 6 events in one day. So that's,
and again, sort of comes back to whether you were lucky enough to be sponsored by the company that made that technological advancement and has proprietary rights over it.
So anytime that an absolute monopoly is created, I see that as bad. However, when it comes to the shoes, I know people will say, listening to this, yeah, well, Nike's created a monopoly. Guess what? Nike's been the leader of shoe technology for a really long time. But if we look at what happened with the shoes on the road, I can name 5 other companies that made a really, really good shoe, completely comparable. In fact, as we saw with Melindy, when comparing the Saucony shoe to the Nike shoe, when she was deciding who would sponsor her, exactly comparable. So I also think to say right now, Nike's the only company that can make a good running shoe. That's bogus. It's not true. Mm-hmm. We've actually it's been proven that it's not true. So I thought that the widely available to be used in competition rule was the only rule we needed. And unfortunately, that's the only rule that has been overturned since World Athletics initially updated their shoe rules in 2019.
Folks can read the story that Maddie wrote, Why Super Spikes Aren't Ruining Track and Field, of course, by visiting runningmagazine.ca. You can find that story. She posted it Friday morning. But Maddie, something else happened Friday afternoon that sort of furthers this conversation.
Mm-hmm. So the Friday edition of The Times, a UK paper, announced that the Nike Vaporfly, which was the specifically designed 100-meter spike from Nike, so the shoe that was to be released with the Dragonfly and the Air Zoom Victory, has been shelved by the company. So according to The Times, it was actually never put forward to World Athletics for approval because Nike was pretty certain that it wouldn't get approved, because there is a rule within the World Athletics criteria that a shoe cannot have 2 plates. If you look at this shoe, it pretty clearly looks like it has 2 plates.
Right.
So it was never put forward and Nike has pulled it from their lineup. It will not be released this summer as is. However, a new updated version could be released ahead of the Olympics.
And that, of course, one of the conversations is that this could really threaten Usain Bolt's world records in the sprint events, which are records that we did not think we'd see go down unless another superstar or some major technological advancements arrived on the scene. And here we are. I guess, you know, the thing that I think really gets to people, some people, the purists, let's say, one of them who's Tim Hutchings, who is a British TV and online commentator, sort of the voice of track and field, especially lately. He does a lot of the commentary for all of the track meets that we've been seeing over the last year. Really great at what he does, but he has sort of picked a battle, especially online on Twitter, with many of the athletes who are running these really fast times in new spike technology. And he said that the suggestion he's put forward is that we should have like a rewriting of the record books then. Like we should have a new category for basically like the pre-shoe technology era and the post-shoe technology era. Because in his mind, there is such an advantage granted by what you're wearing on your feet that it sort of negates the human accomplishments of athletes of the past. And I guess what it seems like to me, and I'm not trying to put words in Tim's mouth, but just with some of the like more old school purists in general, I think there's some anxiety about how far is too far for technology. And I don't think any of us can answer that. And there's lots of people, I think, especially of the younger generation, that would say there isn't a limit.
Well,
that's the point of advancements.
And I was about to say, the older you are when talking about this, the more hesitant you are about technology. And I wonder if there's, sorry, not about technology, about this particular development, if you've been a longtime fan of the sport. And this could be two-pronged. One could be you're hesitant because you were you've been part of the sport for longer. You have more context when it comes to the evolution, and you see this as a massive leap as opposed to like a natural progression. However, my other thought is that millennials, which are largely the people participating in and sponsored by companies and making these products right now, millennials have become so used to this insane rate of change. Like our entire, like think about how different everything is from when we were born to what we're doing right now. Kate, you and I grew up with landlines and no cell phones.
Right.
So I think when you've just been your whole life, you've been primed that things will change constantly and forever. And it may not necessarily be for the better, but that's just going to be the world you live in. There is a chance that we're just more accustomed to things getting flipped on their head and being completely different and going like, okay, but this is how things work. Mm-hmm. And it frankly, probably it's kind of a mesh of those two things. And I think it's completely reasonable. If I had been covering the sport or participating in the sport for years and I saw something that I thought was completely unfair and wrong, I would have a stance that strong as well.
That's all a really good point. And I think you're right. Like, someone like Tim, he himself was an Olympian in the 80s. He's obviously been a lifelong participant and fan of the sport. And so he has a little bit of a bigger context to draw from for this conversation than you or I do, because he was competing before we were even born. And I agree with you that I think probably, at least for me, the answer lies somewhere between the two extremes. Because, you know, to frame it the opposite way, how far back do the purists want us to go? Should we be running on cinder tracks instead of rubber?
Should we continue to not research women's physiology and coach them like men?
Well, exactly. Should we go back to a time when women couldn't race further than the 800 meters at the Olympics because there were fears that our uteruses would fall out? I mean, you're right. Like, these sound silly, but they're all part of the same discussion. Maybe one of the last things I'll say is that this, you mentioned the laser swimsuits. The other thing that comes to mind around some of these technological advancements was the conversation that was had years ago around para athletes like Oscar Pistorius wearing prosthetics that granted him such a huge advantage that they ended up being banned as well, because then it was the technology doing the bulk of the work rather than the human body doing it. And I can understand where some of the anxiety comes in, saying technology is always supposed to assist us to get the best out of ourselves. At what point does that line get crossed and the technology is actually doing the work for us rather than us being able to explore the limits of our own potential. And I don't have the answer. I just think that's an interesting thing to think about.
It's a total preoccupation. This is getting a little bit too meta for this show, but it's like, think about how that permeates your everyday life right now.
But at the end of the day, I think track and field specifically is such a is in such a unique situation because we are seen as like the purest sport, right? It's how high can you jump? How far can you throw? How fast can you run? You don't need you need a team, but you don't need like other players on a field to pass you a ball. You don't need a microchip in your hockey puck, you know, like it's just you and your body and how fast you can go from point A to point B. And I think that's what the purists love about it. And that's what they are lamenting might be getting a little bit lost as we continue exploring how much external equipment can do that for us.
Because then there is this other part of me that thinks like we're members of a sport that's become so obsessed with time to the point of its peril, like to kind of what Mike was saying. And I don't think that's
totally
good. And I don't think that's good either. But I guess my whole point is that it frustrates me to see someone have the best race of their life and then for them to be told. It's like when someone says to you, no offense, and then says something.
That's clearly offensive.
Yeah, you're about to be offended. Otherwise, right. You wouldn't need the precursor. Like, yeah, no offense, but it's your shoes. You're also just trying to like get by in the situation you've been presented with. Like,
right.
I don't know. Anyway, we need to move on because I could go on about this forever. But yeah, no offense, it's your shoes doesn't hack it with me right now.
And you know what? At the end of the day, congrats to everyone who has been running amazing times, personal best, national records, area records, whatever they may be, because no matter how much a shoe might have helped you along a little bit, you put in that work and it's been really fun to watch these times go down. And I think it's only going to continue. And if you are planning on doing any races, dear listeners, most of them, of course, will be virtual, but there are lots of exciting virtual races to sign up for the spring to get you motivated and put some goals on the calendar. So you can check out a piece that was just put up on our website yesterday called A Guide to Upcoming Virtual Races and Challenges. That is at runningmagazine.ca. And we will also link that article in the show notes for today's episode. So we'd love to hear from you as well. Let us know if you're planning on doing a virtual race, which one you're doing and why you chose it. And maybe we'll have some discussion about it on next week's episode. Maddie, what are you excited for this week?
A pretty relaxed week this week compared to my past few, but I will be packing because I am leaving for Victoria, BC for 1 month. We have set up a few race opportunities out there, and BC Athletics has graciously allowed a few Ontario gals to join their meets, provided we go out there 10 days early, self-isolate, and have 2 negative COVID tests. So it's a long trip so that we can meet those requirements. However, those are completely fair requirements, which we will fulfill. So I will be on an airplane this time next week for the first time in over a year.
Very exciting. Was your last plane travel the LA Marathon?
It was. Almost like a year to the day, actually.
I was going to say, that's what I thought.
Yeah. And I remember on that flight, I wore a mask and I remember feeling kind of silly thinking, a lot of people aren't wearing a mask. Do I have to wear a mask? It's kind of uncomfortable. This probably isn't a big deal.
You were just a trendsetter. You were like ahead of the curve when it came to COVID fashion wear.
But even at that time, I bought the masks before I left at Shoppers and I got one of like the very last boxes. So it was a thing. COVID was becoming very real for Canadians at that point.
Right.
But it really got real when I got home.
How are you feeling about flying now?
I mean, a lot of the studies show that airplanes are quite safe. Like they have really high air circulation. However, I'm not jazzed about using the washroom. I'll say that. I might just sort of dehydrate myself and rehydrate when I get there. But I think the travel will be strange. I think it will feel quite odd and probably like I'm doing something wrong. But then I think once I am there and hopefully these races go well and it'll all be worth it. And, you know, our accommodations are super safe. We're not staying in hotels. We're staying in Airbnbs, and we're only staying with the one direct training partner we've had. I think it'll all be very safe. But yeah, it's going to feel, even I was saying, like, I spent like every single night for a year with Jeremy, and it's going to feel like, I'm for sure going to feel like I like lost my mom at a shopping mall or something in the first few days. Like,
I'm sure you'll figure it out.
I'll be fine. I'm a big girl. But you know, yeah. Like, just like you, it's so strange. Like, never have I ever spent this much time with really anyone except like my family when I was a kid. So it's going to be a weird feeling being
somewhere new. I think as we fingers crossed come out of this weirdest thing ever of COVID-19, I think everyone's going to have an adjustment period back to real life, because I think our COVID routines have become so ingrained and so habitual that when we eventually return to some semblance of normalcy, there's going to be a lot of people going through some like partner withdrawal or, you know, things like that. I think it is going to be weird, but I'm very, very happy for you and your training partner that you're going to get out to Victoria and have some competitive opportunities and also escape the snow for a little bit, because woohoo.
Because it keeps coming.
Well, listeners, thank you again for tuning into this week's edition of The Rundown. Of course, Maddie will be joining us next week from across the country. Those of you in BC, give her a virtual hello when she arrives. And of course, you can always follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Shakeout Podcast. Don't forget to check out our newest issue of Canadian Running Magazine on newsstands now. For The Rundown, I'm Kate.
And I'm Maddie.
And we'll chat with you again soon. We also want to acknowledge that yesterday, February 23rd, marks 1 year since Ahmaud Arbery was murdered while out for a run in Georgia. In the words of journalist and Canadian Olympian Rosie Ide, Ahmaud's story is the hideous story of anti-Black racism cutting deep into the world of running. You can read more from Ide in her tribute to Ahmaud Arbery in the Golden Shoe Awards 2020 in Canadian Running Magazine's January and February 2021 issue.